Welcome to C-Suite Radio.
It's time for another edition of the Brett Allen Show.
It's go time, you and me.
Join us weekly for the latest pop culture interviews from your favorite TV shows, movies, comedians, and so much more.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, it felt good.
Plus, you never know who will drop by.
What happened here was a miracle.
Now, here is your host.
I said throw down, boy.
Welcome to the night's main event.
Brett Allen.
Well, today we have a very special guest. I thought we were done with interviews for the holiday season, and then we had the strike. Life has been busy, but we have a super special guest, like huge for the show, Gianmarco Ceresi. You have a new special on Netflix, Verified Stand-Up, which is huge. Congratulations. Thanks for your time. It's great to meet you.
Thank you. Good to meet you, too. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I have seen you like on every podcast, every thing. You're just a busy guy. So we're very lucky to have you. You have done other things before, but the Netflix special is huge. I'm interested to know how this one was built in particular, because it's you with other comics, but yet you're featured because you're on Netflix, which is really, it seems to me like a badge of honor for a comic these days to have that Netflix logo next to their name, which is awesome, by the way.
Sure, I appreciate it. I mean, you know, these kinds of things come about because, you know, companies, they need to figure out a way to get like a really good hour of stand-up while paying the least amount of money possible. So what they do is they find up-and-comers and they kind of get a little bit of each of us. And then they just slap it together. So honestly, this was it's pretty crazy with stand-up in general, where it's rare that they approve of the set or the hour and they go, that's a good enough hour for us to do. They just like you, they trust your work, and they're like, give us 10 minutes on the day of, maybe send us a transcript, we'll check it with legal, but that's about it. And then the rest is kind of up to you to decide what stuff you want to talk about, how you want to navigate it, and just hope you're in the right part of the lineup for it to work.
Well, I do mean this sincerely. I don't really consider you, though, to be an up-and-comer because you've done so many things. But I guess it's really a subjective term based on like more of like the industry side of things, really. Is that really?
Yeah. Okay. I think of the term up and comer has meant everything to everyone. I'm just glad I got the title before all my beard turned gray. So okay. I think it just, you know, different parts of the industry, they feel excited to be like, oh, we got them on the way up. And so as long as that window lasts, you kind of embrace it. And yeah, I agree with you though. I think doing stand-up for, I think eight and a half years, I'm out of the up and coming phase, but listen, I'll do whatever they
You're
tell
like,
me.
I'll embrace it if it's going to get me, more exposure.
They don't do compilations of old road dogs, struggling to get out of bed in the morning. These 10 comedians couldn't believe that they're still alive. And so they just call us up and coming to keep us feeling young.
Well, although that would be fun to see that. No, it's interesting. The reason
well,
I say this.
That's what dry bar comedy is.
Right. Yeah. Which I know I've had a lot of comics who that's where they got their big special on dry bar. Justin Smith, you know, out of Tennessee in the Nateland world. And we just talked to him a few weeks ago and he struggled to get Netflix, and now he's got that coming down the way, which honestly, having spoken to so many comedians, the vibe I get, and please correct me if I'm wrong, like Netflix is cool, but there are multiple other channels now for distribution for you to get your comedy out there, right? Well, for you, Just for Laughs is where you were picked, up and comers or new faces.
New
was
faces,
it?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you were spotted by Pete Holmes and all these other guys. And, you know, the list goes on and on. So But I feel like
it's all
earned
so
your spot.
Gradual.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's there. There is no, I think it used to, I know it used to be very different where there were moments like new faces, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you could get a TV show out of that.
Yeah.
CBS would give you a 6-figure holding deal for something. And that's changed. I think there are very, very few huge things that can happen that launch you into stardom. I think like still getting on SNL is a pretty big one. But like new faces, even the Netflix set, the James Corden, the late nights. I mean, Tonight Show used to be the end all be all. And now, yeah. I mean, I did Corden, which isn't the same as the Tonight Show, but I think two people in my entire life have come up to me and said, I loved you on Corden. And it's like, it's not like those shows, you can tell, I sometimes look, it's a shitty thing to do, but you know, Jimmy Fallon, before he introduces you, will say, so-and-so is going to be at Zany's Nashville this Friday. Yeah. And you're like, okay, Zany's Nashville is maybe 300 seats. You'd think if the Tonight Show had a real cultural heft, mentioning one 300-seat show should sell out that night. But they don't. Maybe moves 2 tickets, 4 tickets. And that just means that you have to do everything constantly. And it's a long, deep saturation into the public consciousness to actually elevate yourself as a comedian. And that's just...
Yeah, it is true, but you've earned your spot for sure. Well, it's interesting. I do have a sidebar question about that. It was funny. Adam Carolla said that in an interview when he first went on The Tonight Show or one of these things. You know, he was expecting the phone to ring off the hook. Joel Zimmerman said, like, Taylor Swift's phone rings off the hook, but you go on The Tonight Show or any of these things, your phone is Nate Bargatze's phone rings off the hook, right? But you go on there. But you make a fair point that back in the 80s comedy boom, Carson was the way into like TV and success, or maybe early on, what's his name? Not Johnny Carson, but Jay Leno. But sure. Now there's like all of these ways to become successful, which you've done. You've stand in your own right. But now it's up to you essentially to sell seats, right? A club books you. They'll do their fair hand of promotion, but really it's your job to go on TikTok, Instagram, whatever social you're prominent on and to try and move tickets, right?
Yeah, I think you're being more generous to the clubs. Some of them do their fair share. And some do. I think there are clubs out there that could sell out a weekend on their own merit. But more and more, the clubs are very dependent on the comedian promoting. And I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's there's certain markets where I'll do well and the promo seems to work. I had great shows in San Francisco and Chicago, Toronto, and then Europe. And I think that's because of YouTube Shorts. And then it's like I'm in Philly this weekend and I'm maybe not the smartest choice. I'm doing 5 shows. This is a 320-seater. And again, you know, I just had a Netflix thing. It's very cool. But ultimately, I sold a certain number. None of the shows are going to get canceled, which I guess is a victory. But then it's like 320 seats times 5.
That's a lot of seats.
1,500. I mean, that's 1,600 seats. And it is you just keep promoting. And you can only do so much. I could promote till the cows come home. I'm not selling out all 5 of these shows.
Right.
Unless I did something crazy. You have occasionally my opener, Ariel Elias, who had the beer can thrown at her. Like something like that happens. It goes viral everywhere. It's on the news. Maybe. But otherwise, it's kind of a litmus test for this is how I sell in Philly. And you promote and it's – I definitely did better than the last time I was in Philly. And who knows, maybe next time I'll sell it all 5. Maybe it'll take 3 more times, but it's just, it is a marathon 100%.
Well, that's cool. Ariel's opening for you. I remember that.
Oh, not this time. She used to. Now okay. She's headlining on her own.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If I want Ariel, I got to pay a lot more. So hopefully soon. I love working with
Ariel. You're funny. You're like, her fee just went up like massive.
It did.
Yeah, we've tried getting her on the show. I think after that event happened, and
she was very, very busy. But keep trying. I'm sure she'd love to.
Yeah, we'll get her on eventually. We've had really good luck with a lot of great people like yourself. That's interesting. I like your honesty. Have you been to Denver Market yet? Like Comedy Works, Comedy Fort.
So I've done Comedy Fort, which was great.
That's my club back here. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I'm going back next year. I was doing Denver Comedy Underground. I had such good shows there, but I'm going to do Comedy Works for the first time next year.
Okay.
And, you know, that's one of those shows that I am determined to sell out, because, you know, working that club is, it's, if you ask any comedian alive, kind of what are the top 10 clubs in the country, that is going to be one of them.
She's the Mitzi Shore of the Colorado area, like 100%, like, that is what she is. And I know a lot of comedians local here in Loveland where I live and that work the corridor. They do the brewery shows. They do, these local shows here almost weekly, but then they also play at the Fort, which is great. And then of course, Comedy Works is really where a lot of them go to. So they kind of play this, they call it the Colorado corridor for comedy, or they come from Loveland, go to Boulder, go up here, go there. A lot of people you've probably crossed paths with, but I can't remember her name, but the woman that books those shows, they do refer to her as the Mitzi Shore of the, because she has a lot of power for who she brings through. And if you can get passed by her, not for you necessarily because you're headlining, but I mean, that's a big deal to get booked by her. And to play those shows, I'm sure you'll do fine. I mean, those clubs are great. They have great shows there.
Sure. I mean, I started in New York, and I think the one benefit of that is like there's a lot of different routes you can go.
Yeah,
you can thrive in New York without being at the Comedy Cellar. You can, you know, I am at the Cellar. I'm not at the Stand, and I wish I was at the Stand. But I think it would be really tough in a smaller scene that, you know, one or two clubs have that much power.
Yeah.
And, you know, you like gotta get into them. And that's really tough. That's really tough. That's just a benefit of being in a big city is that you don't have to be liked by everyone. Cause I didn't work New York Comedy Club for a long time just cause the booker just wasn't a fan. I tried doing what I could, but it's just like, that's the reality. And that's tough. I sometimes wish I started in a smaller scene so I could have more of a community. But on the other hand, that is the benefit of like being in New York.
Yeah. So they say that you get good in New York and get famous in LA. Like, do you find that statement to be true generally, or is it different for everybody?
Yeah. I mean, I think like it's, you know, it's not everyone who goes to LA gets famous. That's for sure.
No.
But like industry just goes to LA shows insanely more than they ever do in New York. It happens now and then in New York. There's a great comedian named Tina Frimmel who, you know, Jimmy Fallon was like at the Cellar and saw her go up. And, you know, 2 weeks later, she's doing the Tonight Show. But that really happens quite infrequently, whereas in LA you hear about network people and agents. It's just a different culture, and it's such a shame because on the whole LA comedians are generally weaker. There's good ones for sure. That's not to insult all LA comedians, but it's just a difference in priorities and the amount that you work at it and just the overall playing field.
Yeah. But overall, I feel like you've reached a certain level of success, obviously, because you're doing a lot of things that a lot of people probably would want to do. In particular, the Netflix special, obviously, which is huge. But you've worked your way up to a certain point where you're headlining clubs. Do you do openers or features these days for anything, or is it pretty much just you going where you can go?
Pretty much just me. It's okay. Just like, I'm able to fill up my calendar, you know?
Okay.
I just like doing time. If I have my druthers, I'm doing an hour 15, hour 30. And I really am into when I can doing a two-man show. or a one woman, one man show, and just keeping the show like, you know, 2 hours. So that's what I like to do. I think it would be really cool. It's kind of on my vision board for next year to open for a bigger comedian, like at a big theater or at a, you know, a arena, I guess. That would be very cool. But otherwise, you know, it's the me show, and that's what I'm working on perfecting to the best of my abilities.
How long does it take you to get to a place where you have a solid set, 45 minutes, an hour? It's different for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I just am always like writing and fine tuning. And so I don't really have an exact math, because it's not like I do an hour, burn it. Maybe I'll get to a place where I have to operate like that, because I'll be, you know, more people will be watching. So when I put this joke here, that means it's burnt. But for now, it's just like, I just keep building. It's a little bit chaotic. I have all these different Word documents where I try not to lose anything I really love. And when push comes to shove and I have to do a Netflix, I take the chunks that I'm really passionate about. I figure out how they go together. And then I just fine tune them. And I really bring it to that next level. And these days, as I have more opportunities that are filmed, not that it's that many, but I try to discipline myself to really, really get that joke or that chunk from a B level to an A level ready to film, so that should the opportunity arise, I'm ready to go. But ultimately, I just love working on new stuff. And once it kind of starts working, I go, great, that's alive. I can just do that occasionally. And when I need to fine tune it, that's when I'll go back in there and work out any kinks and add any little jokes I can in between. And that's kind of my process.
I love it. I think it's just such a creative art form, you know, as to what you do. And again, just having spoken with so many of your peers, so to speak, everybody's process is different, but yet it gets you to the same place, right? Some people bring the notepad on stage. Some people have concepts. Some people have this or that, but yet it gets you to a place where you can get up there for an hour 15, and just murder a crowd. And I think that's just so cool. The math and science, literally, I think, behind like a joke, which is so cool, man. And this Netflix verified stand-up, your material there is just really funny. And I mean, I've watched a lot of your things in preparation for our conversation, but really that being the most recent, I think it's just fantastic, man. Like, the sky's the limit. I really do mean that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I really do. So now that you've got this, you're working on getting ready to tour next year. Are you ready for the new year? How has this year been for you? You're filling up your calendar, but are you ready to just launch for next year?
I'm really determined to film an hour. It's overdue. I have some stuff I really want to put out there that I haven't on any social media platforms, because I'm like, I want to save it for something bigger. And it can be tough, because with social media, I try to post something every day, and you have to kind of find a balance between creating short form content and work and material and building something that, you know, builds even more, has a deeper thesis underneath it. And so I'm really dead set on, in the first half of the new year, filming an hour and start deciding what is, do I start the new hour? Do I do a B-sides hour? And I just like fully get the slate clean and start new. But the first and foremost, I just want to put out an hour or hour 15, whatever comes out. And, you know, it's hard to articulate the goals in this business. The ones that I'd love to, you know, explore acting again, see if I want to do it as seriously as I did when I was in my early 20s. I would love to do some panel shows. I hope my podcast, The Downside, expands to a place where it sustains itself and I can have kind of a full team. But ultimately, my overall goal is just to be a strong stand-up, to feel like I am, have a process that really feels connected to who I am in any given moment and expressing the things I really want to express. You have to play the game. You have to talk about some topical things. You have to post. You have to tour in places you don't want to. But I just want to keep fine-tuning it where I feel like my output is as connected to my mind. And that's the goal, just to keep being excellent at a thing.
Love it. You've got the podcast, which is great, by the way. I listened to a couple episodes.
Thank you.
Have that. You are going to be touring next year. And the last question or topic I want to talk about, and I've been asking a lot of people about this, is the crowd work comedy boom, so to speak, on TikTok, Instagram. Do you have thoughts on that? As far as, like, some people say it's great. Some people say you're selling a false dream of when I pay, so to speak, and come see you. I mean, somebody just put out an entire special on crowd work. Some people have tried it and they said it just was horrible for them and they'll never do it again.
Sure. I understand comedians' like frustration with it, but their frustration is, as always, it's misplaced. You're mad at the algorithm. You're mad at what's popular. And I ultimately think that if you're going to be mad at what people are into, you're just a fucking crybaby. You need to decide if you want to do crowd work. Great. If you don't, that's fine too. I think if you, some people will think that just people who are good at crowd work are great at stand-up comedy. And then those people will buy tickets to Matt Rife and they'll find out for themselves that, you know, the truth. And that's fine. That's fine. Let them go on that journey. I think I get bitter because I see comics complain about crowd work or mock crowd work in a way where I go, oh, you just don't like improv or you don't like what this is, which is fine. And I get defensive, of course, because I post a lot of crowd work because I have to, because I want to save my material for a fucking special. Right. And it's just a different thing. And some audiences go and they go, oh, it's all crowd work. I wanted more stand-up. Other audiences go and they go, oh, I thought you were going to roast me. And it's just like, I think the downside of it is that you have a lot of young comics who lean into the crowd work. And so they never force themselves to make jokes that are top tier. If I was doing crowd work the way that I think some young comedians do now, when I was first starting, I don't think I ever would have fine tuned my jokes, because if I was ever struggling in a show, I would just pivot to crowd work. Nothing easier than that. And I do think that's a problem, but that's not about the existence of crowd work. I think that's more like comedy clubs or the tastemakers, whether it be the Mitzi Shore of Denver or the big clubs here. They're the ones that have to be like, no, we're a comedy club and we want stand up here. They have to not be wowed by social media numbers and actually continue to base their lineups off talent. And I think a lot of comedy clubs in America have really given over to the idea of the comedian is, it's going to be their job to get the butts in the seats.
Yeah.
And because of that, they've lost their ability to set a high bar. No one's going to the comedy club for the comedy club. They're going just for whatever particular comedian they follow. And that will not be sustainable, because what will happen is you'll get a bunch of social media stars who demand to get 100% of the door, because they'll say, well, they're just here for me. They don't give a shit about you. You don't give me everything I want. I'm going to go rent a box and get 100%. And then the comedy club will have to start regaining a foothold as a tastemaker, as someone you trust. So all these things cycle, all these things shuffle. But to fight crowd work, to fight the fun of a comedian talking to an audience member is foolish, because it's always existed.
Yeah,
it's always been an element of live entertainment. And you know, I see great comics like Mark Maron or Gary Gulman complain about it. And I go, that's fine. You don't fucking need it. You sell out theaters. I have to fucking sell more seats at my Philly Punchline show this weekend. Fuck off.
Yeah,
I write jokes too. I got to do something different. If I came up in the 80s where just because you had 5 minutes of good material, HBO would give you a special and then you'd be a household name, then I wouldn't do crowd work either.
Yeah, but like if you were like ass. Part of the premium blendies or like, yeah. you know, the Comedy Central. Yeah, that's interesting. I like it. Yeah, it's like Joe Coy goes to a comedy club that seats 200 people. He's going to sell the whole weekend out, double, triple over, right? But for those who, I think Nate Jackson was the one I noticed on TikTok during the last year or so that really started boosting up his crowd work. And now he's got a special. So, I mean, there's obviously proof positive that it works, but I think you're dead on as far as like the generations are the ones that are complaining. And that's okay because, you know, that's just the way the business works. It's interesting.
This is the way it works. But I think when you're an adult going like, oh, the kids are all wrong, you got to ask yourself, like, yeah. when I was a kid, what did I think of these adults? And again, like, I think there's lots of comedians that are decent at crowd work that fucking suck at stand-up. But the truth will reveal itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's more important to just be elevating the people you think that are making great comedy. And I think shows are fun. I like doing a little crowd work just to keep it interesting for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my overall feeling. I've never met anyone complain about crowd work who was great at crowd work. I'll put it like that.
Yeah, I know. It's like that. Yeah, I mean, I could think of like 5-10 people off the top of my head who you go see in a club. They could just do that for an hour and it would be fine and people wouldn't complain, right? But the one thing I did learn early on about comedians is that clubs is where you work out material, try new things that might or might not be funny. You might pull out some greatest hits. And then all of a sudden, a year later, they've got a Netflix special or wherever, Amazon Prime you pick, and you see little nuggets here and there of that set you saw a year ago. I love it. Well, congratulations, man. This has been a really good conversation. I love you, man. I think you're the best. And when you come out to Denver, we'll come see you. We come to that club a lot. Yeah, congratulations, of course, Verified Stand Up on Netflix now. And then what are your socials where people can connect?
Sure. So you can find me everywhere. It's at my name, at Gianmarco Cerezi. I'm literally on every platform you can imagine. And, my podcast is on, you can watch on YouTube or all your podcast platforms. It's called The Downside with Gianmarco Cerezi.
Gianmarco, thank you, my friend. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening and being a part of today's conversation.
Thank you!
If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. It's absolutely free.
A mega proportion.
The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
And remember, we care.